Welcome to the NutraCast, a production by Nutra Ingredients USA. I'm Danielle Masterson. Thank you for joining me here on the NutraCast, where we talk and share insights from inside the nutrition industry. Lux Research recently unveiled their take on the future of digital biomarkers. The report looks at these biomarkers using five key factors to gauge their market readiness. Joining me now to tell us more about this report is Danny Brandon, the lead analyst for digital health and wellness at Lux Research. Welcome to the NutraCast, Danny.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before we unpack this research, can you kind of tell us what are digital biomarkers and what the difference is between them and traditional biomarkers?
Absolutely. So I would like to actually first and foremost say that the term digital biomarkers is still a little bit fluffy right now out in the literature. There's a number of other terms like digital phenotype that essentially all mean the same thing. So what a biomarker in general is a piece of data that facilitates the decision-making process around a course of treatment or a diagnosis for a medical professional. Traditional biomarkers are things that you might have seen, like having an ultrasound done or an EKG, or having more, even more traditionally, blood work and biopsy is a really common example of this. Where digital biomarkers come in are when you're able to actually develop a biomarker from data that is collected continuously and non-invasively from some of the really interesting digital tools that we're starting to see in the consumer marketplace. So things like Fitbit and Amazon, which, you know, again, non-invasively and continuously measure markers of things like heart rate and sleep and all of these other metrics, are able to really get a better snapshot of what an individual's body is functioning like. And so you end up with this really nice data set that can be used to make these diagnoses and make these treatment decisions.
Ah, so it sounds like digital biomarkers are more accurate then?
Not necessarily. When we talk about digital biomarkers versus the more traditional ones, there's not necessarily more accuracy. There's a couple of things that I guess would sway an opinion in the favor of digital biomarkers. So digital biomarkers right now, in terms of their development, aren't really going to be competing with things like a biopsy for a cancer diagnostic. But what they do is allow for a much more holistic approach to collecting data about an individual. So if you're getting continuous non-invasive data, you're getting a continuous spread of data about an individual that allows you to avoid that weird snapshot syndrome. Sometimes you hear the phrase white coat syndrome, where you end up with artificial readings as a result of it being one single data point that's collected in time. This way you end up with a much better picture. And so you end up with, I won't say one is better than the other, but you do end up with a more accurate snapshot of an individual's lifestyle as a whole.
Gotcha. So you assess these digital biomarkers on five key factors to gauge their market readiness in the coming year. What are the key factors that you took a look at?
At Lux, we actually have a particular product that we put out that looks at new technologies through the lens of five very specific markers. And they are product technology readiness level, market organization, market readiness, and production. So when I say product, just to give a quick overview, we define and compare the current technology to the incumbent technology. So when I say current, I mean the thing we're looking at. So in this case, it would be digital biomarkers compared to more traditional ones. For technology readiness level, we're looking at, you know, what the state of the technology is, if it's still mostly in research versus whether or not there are actual partnerships or product launches. For market organization, we're looking at how, you know, how organized is the market? Is there regulatory concerns? Are there a lot of partnerships that make entry possible? When we look at market readiness, what we're talking about are the unmet needs. So again, that ties back a little bit to the unmet needs you might see that aren't addressed by current incumbent solutions, but what you're seeing from a technology perspective. And then finally, for production, we look at what are the current constraints in the real world to actually produce the product. So the report takes a look at digital biomarkers specifically through those five lenses. And that's how we look at assessing the likelihood of any particular technology hitting the market within a particular timeframe.
And what were some of your findings?
So we were actually able to come up with a definition, which I'm actually very excited about, simply because digital biomarkers are still so amorphous. But in general, to kind of go through that checklist of those five. So in terms of product, what we see is that you know, the digital biomarkers really offer this great opportunity to complement these more traditional biomarkers. So you end up with a digital product that, again, I keep saying the continuous and non-invasive piece. In contrast to the more traditional biomarkers, you're able to get more real-time data, you're able to get a longer period of data, and you're able to get better compliance from patients. And so there are some significant advantages to digital biomarkers for, you know, using it as a diagnosis or even for maintaining and managing consumer wellness. In terms of technology readiness level, one of the really exciting things about digital biomarkers is that they're kind of, like, it sounds bad, but they're kind of all over the place in that there's a number of sections that there's a number of different healthcare verticals that digital biomarkers address that are very much in early stages and very early research. So things like specific disease detection, we have more moderate levels of readiness, which we've actually seen already launch in terms of real world products. So COVID-19 helped really drive the pressure to discover ways to detect either having a symptomatic COVID-19 through cough sounds, for example, that might be picked up through a smartphone, or even asymptomatic carriers of COVID-19, which you started to see in the product offering by Fitbit's Ready to Work. And while Fitbit's Ready to Work did not address COVID-19 specifically, we started to see this rise in being able to detect different levels of probability of having an infection in general, be it viral or bacterial. And so that was really exciting. And then we also have an established set of technologies, which are really exciting and a little bit more established for things like detecting cognitive decline in Alzheimer's, which means that there's this really broad spectrum you can look at for digital biomarkers. And kind of depending on where you are in terms of the type of healthcare vertical you're interested in really speaks to how ready it is. So it's really exciting and there's a lot of change. And then depending on what you're interested in, there's a lot of opportunity for growth and there's a lot of opportunity for product.
It sounds like it. What was the most surprising thing that came about?
Honestly, the most surprising thing was the wide range of things that physicians and other medical professionals and researchers are looking to address through digital biomarkers. I think that in terms of things like market readiness and production, it wasn't really a surprise because when you see things like production, we know that digital biomarkers are purely digital. And so there's a lot of devices on the market today that can leverage that software. But really seeing the level of creativity and the repurposing of existing data sets for particular health conditions, like there's a researcher that is looking at being able to help with earlier diagnostics of HIV, for example, which is something that I might never consider being relevant to things like step count and heart rate, but there are these really interesting correlations that with further research we'll be able to refine for population health and for, you know, even more personalized solutions.
Wow. And so that sort of comes to surface based on these algorithms, is that right?
Yeah. So that's really the secret sauce, is that you have this glut of data coming in from what's typically off-the-shelf sensors that's being processed to find particular patterns. And of course, you don't want to say that any particular set of data is a direct result of something because correlation is not causation. But with further clinical validation, you end up with, you know, really interesting software that can do a lot of really neat things.
So you've mentioned a few medicinal type examples. What about personalized nutrition?
So it's a really interesting way to go. And it's one of the things at Lux we think about in terms of consumer health. As you mentioned early on when you introduced me, I'm the lead analyst for digital health and wellness. And what's particularly interesting to me is that wellness is kind of it's an interesting and fluffy word that often means a lot of different things to different people. And particularly with nutrition, there's this interest in moving it from fluffy to more clearly defined in terms of value. And so one of the neat applications that we're starting to see companies that produce, you know, nutrition solutions or consumer packaged good companies starting to look at are ways to find digital biomarkers or products that can help validate the claims of their nutritional offering. So say, for example, you have someone who develops a food product that they claim helps with sleep. They may or may not go through any kind of regulatory body approval, but it really helps their consumer base understand that it works if they can tie a specific digital biomarker or specific reading on a wearable to better sleep to their nutritional product.
Okay. So yeah, we've all witnessed this major growth in wearables and also smartphones. And I have to imagine those had an impact on the rise of digital biomarkers. Another indication might be tech companies. They're acquiring these health and nutrition companies. Is that something that you look at too?
Yeah, so there's right now what's, I keep saying it's really exciting, but it's true. It's this, we're at this really neat time in understanding the development of the future of healthcare, in that we know, for example, that we have a rapidly aging global population, we have an unsustainable healthcare landscape, and we know that we can't afford a lot of things. And in order to really kind of change the paradigm of healthcare from, you know, just fixing in quotation words, people that are sick, moving it towards a more maintaining people that are well. There's been this huge opportunity for tech companies to kind of jump into this, again, that fuzzy word wellness, to try and help maintain health. And so there's been a lot of acquisition for these, you know, building blocks of staying well. So be it nutrition or exercise or sleep. That's where we're starting to see tech companies really engage. And because a lot of nutrition has a lot of numbers and clinical support already, it's a lot easier for tech companies to start looking to acquire those pieces.
I also wanted to ask you about COVID. Do you feel this has accelerated the growth, or maybe it stifled it?
One of the really interesting things about COVID is that it put healthcare front and center. And as I'd mentioned earlier, one of the things that we saw kind of come out of COVID, looking through the lens of digital biomarkers, is there was this sudden rush to develop them to help see if there was a way to, you know, non-invasively identify COVID cases. And so using smartphone microphones, people looked at cough sounds, people looked at, you know, again, Fitbit and Aura both launched products to determine whether or not employees were ready to go to work or if they exhibited particular symptoms of disease that maybe suggested they should take a day off. We may not be using the word digital biomarkers to describe these products, but this is really the first major commercial launch of them. And I think one of the extra neat things about digital biomarkers is that they have this potential to be in the landscape and as part of a device that you may not know, you may never hear the words digital biomarker as part of the marketing, but that doesn't change that that's what it is. And it's so it's this thing that's very neatly sliding into the healthcare space, much the way, and this is my big exciting plug, when I think about digital biomarkers and how they're changing the healthcare landscape, it's very similar to how microbiology and the understanding of bacteria, bacteriology really grew out of our last major pandemic of the great influenza. And so we're seeing these really neat parallels between these things that are kind of giving a good kickstart to the consumer understanding of the value of this technology, even if that language isn't being used.
But I do have to say, a lot of people are becoming more familiar with the gut microbiome. It is becoming a little more mainstream.
That is true. And I think that it's kind of had a resurgence, which is really neat to see. And it's really neat to see we're looking at the gut microbiome. It's a little, when I think about microbiology in general, what I think about is right now we kind of take for granted that if you go to the hospital and you get, you know, a culture done, like that's just normal. Whereas it's not normal yet that your doctor will look at your Fitbit data, for example. But we're moving in that direction. And I think that's just a really interesting progression to see and see these parallels.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, so digital biomarkers, could they be incorporated into, say, probiotics or something, along those lines in the dietary supplement industry?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's easy to do, and I would never want to undercut the incredible amount of work that goes into generating the science behind this. But I could absolutely see using a digital biomarker as a validation for a supplement or helping understand what nutrients you might be lacking that would help guide your decision making around taking a particular supplement. Like things, again, we look at sleep and, you know, vitamin deficiencies. If you have a way to tie behavior or tie, I would say, healthcare outcomes to taking a supplement, that's a really powerful opportunity right there.
Yeah, there's so much opportunity. And I imagine, there's so many things driving this growth, like your research, for instance. What is hampering the growth? I imagine it's probably expensive, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, oh, yeah. So research in general is expensive. I think what's really hampering the growth and what I'm, you know, looking forward to in the next couple of years is that a lot of the research projects that have been feeding the development of digital biomarkers have been very much in like that fuzzy research space. And so it's been kind of a question of who funds it and why do they fund it. And so what's been hampering the growth is finding that commercially viable approach to bringing a digital biomarker to market. But I would say that even though that's been kind of hampered, we've been seeing pretty rapid growth in terms of the kinds of digital biomarkers that are having research done. So the landscape is really ripe for someone to come in and take advantage of research to fund it, to acquire, you know, any startup that is working on it, which is, it's just a very rich landscape right now for that.
Yeah. So I guess what would be your advice for, say, a nutraceutical company who is considering incorporating digital biomarkers into their business?
I would say the first thing that they should look at is get familiar with what's out there and what types of data sources are being used to generate the digital biomarkers that are most relevant to you. Not every company will need to have access to all of the data that comes from our different wearable devices and smartphones in order to generate a meaningful digital biomarker. So I would suggest the first thing they do is kind of get their hands around what's out there. What do they already have access to? A lot of development companies have access to really rich data pools that they often don't think of. And so I think that's the first step. And I don't know if maybe I'm cutting ahead of what you were going to ask next, but the second step is you have two options, really. You can either develop one in-house, in which case I would suggest you really want to start looking for software engineers who are comfortable managing and maintaining this data. But you can also really outsource this to different startup companies that work as third parties to help develop digital biomarkers for not only research purposes, but for clinical trial validation and for, I would say, that next step of getting the data you need to make consumers comfortable with your product.
Okay, that's some great information right there. And just to put it bluntly, can companies avoid this? I mean, is this something that once it's here and it catches on, everything will be personalized? Will there be a need or a demand for generalized products? Can, say, nutrition companies survive without that personalized touch?
I think that's a great question. And it's actually one I've talked to a number of my colleagues about. It's one of those things we commonly debate. I think it's possible to technically survive. But I think that really with the direction that we're going more and more in terms of nutrition and nutraceuticals is this more personalized angle. You're always going to be able to get away, especially in like nutrition for wellness and health space, of having a more holistic product offering. One of the concerns that we have when we talk about digital products is there is going to be an extra expense associated with them, and you don't want to necessarily have a pure divide between the technology haves and have-nots, which could be a whole nother podcast.
Yep.
But that is a concern. And so there is a marketplace for these more generalized solutions. But then one of the really exciting things is that there is this opportunity to make a big dent in health and wellness. And so if that's the direction you want to go, you should be doing it now. You really do need to start getting a handle on it because the window for this will close fairly rapidly.
Okay. Some good stuff to keep in mind. This has been such a fascinating topic to talk to you about. How do you go about selecting what you're going to research? What goes into that process?
Oh, that is a great question. So I think one of the cool things about Lux is that we do a lot of research on the very, very cutting edge. One of our differentiators is that cutting edge, super novel technologies. And so what we have is a bunch of analysts who get to talk to people who are on this forefront. And so you start to get like this, you start to get a gut feeling or a tickle about a particular technology. And so as an analyst starts to think about their research plan, they kind of listen to that voice. And then from there, you know, you want to, of course, build up some evidence that it's actually worth looking at. But that's really the kernel of how it starts. So you start there and then you end up really starting to do a deep dive, and then you'll gain evidence that something is really actually happening and you build out your research from there. And so that's why digital biomarkers, again, it's a really interesting topic. And when I think about what's kind of started me looking at digital biomarkers, there was the snowball effect. We didn't even have, there wasn't a consolidated term for digital biomarkers up until about, well, now 3 years ago. And so seeing this progression is really where we start to make our decisions about whether or not we're going to cover a topic in the future.
Very interesting. And before I let you go, any new research that you're working on or any updates that you can tell us about?
Oh, so I can tell you the next reports I'll be working on. In the next quarter, I'll be putting out a report to try to pin down a little bit more about this wellness terminology. So, as I mentioned before, the word wellness is a little bit fluffy in terms of how people think about this. And what I'll be looking to do is publish a report, kind of putting some guardrails around that term so that clients and consumers have a better sense of really what that means. And then later on this year, as a follow-up to this particular digital biomarkers report, I'll be looking at the different data sources that are available and how they've fed into particular healthcare verticals. So hopefully that will help develop a little bit of a preliminary roadmap for if you want to work in one particular disease, what does it look like and what data sources do you need to help accomplish that?
That's pretty fascinating stuff right there. You'll have to keep us updated on those reports. Danny Bradnan from Lux Research, thank you so much for joining us here on the NutriCast.
Thank you.
If you like what you just heard, you can subscribe to the NutriCast on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can also head to NutraIngredients-USA.com for even more Nutra-related content. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Danielle Masterson. As always, I'll catch you here on the NutriCast next week.